You're back with Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we have an interview with Liam Flanardi, who is the Australian Greens campaign manager for the seat of Griffith, where Max Chandler Mather won in the federal election. And Liam joins us now to talk a bit about the campaign and how they won, and what lessons it offers for the left. Welcome, Liam, to the show.
G'day.
and congratulations on an inspirational campaign and win by the Greens. The vote reached its highest level ever. I think it's 12%, winning a few seats in the lower house and in the Senate. And I think that's the best election result for the party in history.
Absolutely, yeah. Very exciting.
I guess, Liam, the first question we wanted to ask is, can you tell us how you did it? You know, how you pulled it off, some of the key issues that the Greens campaigned on and helped win those seats. Explain the vote. Thanks.
There's a couple of factors in all of this. Obviously the overall vote increase to the Greens, I think, can be put down to a couple of factors. Largely, I would say the strategy led by Adam Bandt's team, after taking over from Richard Di Natale, I think Adam's team took the party in a very good direction, sort of putting forward a more comprehensive, and I would say like a more class-based politics, one that very explicitly said we're going to go after the big billionaires and big corporations and make them pay to fund the kind of universal program on a social level, and obviously also the transition on an energy and climate level. And that, I think, as well as kind of going after the political class who are like lacking any vision and kind of becoming increasingly disconnected from everyday people. So that sort of overall message, I think, can to some extent explain the large scale increase in the vote across the country. But I think that was then supplemented by a handful of seats, including Griffith. Griffith being the biggest of them, I think, in terms of running gigantic sort of field campaigns and a large-scale kind of community campaigns and things like that, that sort of really massively amplified that message and meant that we could win these lower house seats in a way that the Greens haven't been able to do before.
Yeah, and you're also speaking with Sue Bolton and Ari as well. Sue, did you want to ask a question of Liam about some of those community campaigns that were a big part of, building confidence in people?
Yes. Hi, Liam. Great to have you on the show. Yes, exactly Chloe's question. It'd be great to have you. Great to have you talk a little bit about what sort of community campaigns, because I gather from the article you wrote in Green Left reprinted that you talked a bit about the role of community campaigns. Mm. So just, what sort of campaigns, and also in the other areas where you've won seats in Brisbane, like Ryan, did the Ryan campaign have a similar approach to the approach you had in the seat of Griffith? I mean, yep. Ryan is sort of a bit more well-heeled area from when I used to live in Brisbane. I don't know if it still is, but it's a bit different in character.
They're really good questions. And I think, just on that Ryan-Griffith thing, I mean, I think the difference between the two can be a little bit overstated. They both have very wealthy areas in them, but they also have more working class areas, probably Ryan a little bit more teal in its kind of overall character, but there's certainly large areas of it that are a bit more working class, and that's the same with Griffith. In terms of the campaign, there was the Ryan campaign and the Griffith campaign both ran large-scale door-knocking campaigns. That was the similarity, which is why I think that's the basis of both of their enormous swings. It was really this approach to trying to get as many one-on-one meaningful interactions as possible with people at their doors. And we in Griffith had about almost 29,000 of those. And in Ryan, I think they had just over 15,000. And I think those conversations, particularly the way we do it up in Queensland and in Brisbane, are the core to us increasing our vote, because we're really connecting with people on the issues that matter to them at their door, and not sort of proselytizing and trying to talk down to them about why they should vote for the Greens. But then on the community stuff, I think where Ryan had the advantage of having Michael Berkman's state seat in it, and that allowed Libby's campaign to sort of leverage his community campaigning work. I don't think the Ryan campaign had the same capacity that we did in Griffith to run their own community campaigns, but they could work with Michael on his things. In terms of Griffith, the community campaign work that we did were things like there was a large-scale development planned on an old barracks site that was just sold off by the federal government in Bulimba to a private developer, and that developer wanted to bulldoze a very lovely, you know, popular little park to put in a four-lane access road to that development, just drive this four-lane road right through the middle of it. And so we, through door knocking, actually Max ended up, I think, chatting to someone in the area at their door, and they brought it up, and that's how we found out about the issue. And then we decided that we'd help the community sort of fight to save that park. And so we, you know, launched this plan to save Tugulua Park from privatization, basically, was how we framed it. And planted a community garden right in the middle of where the access road was going to go. So to try to build this kind of sense that the community loved this area and they didn't want to let it go to the developer. And so we just kind of, and the council didn't want us to, you know, said that that was illegal. We weren't allowed to plant that garden, but we just went ahead and did it. And then they kind of just caved, which was nice. So those sorts of things. And that was a really good way to just organize locals to do that themselves, and now it's a self-organizing little community garden. That's one thing. Probably the biggest things that I'm most proud of, though, were our responses to COVID and the floods. So while they weren't community campaigns in the sense of what we normally think of in terms of like little left local issues, community campaigns to save a park or stop a, you know, extra lane on a highway or something, it was very much that kind of social organizing to try to help people out in these crisis times. And so as soon as the Omicron wave sort of hit at the start of the year, we actually, it was even earlier, it was late last year that we had this basics box thing where people who are isolating could get in touch with our office, and we would go and drop off a box of food and basic supplies, some, you know, pain medication, rat tests if they were available, if we could find them. and we drop it around to them and sort of check in on them and all of that sort of a thing. And then when the floods hit, the other thing that we did was coordinate a massive sort of disaster relief program, basically. Firstly, yeah, dropping off food and ice and stuff to people who'd lost power in their homes, and then all sorts of other things, setting up free barbecues at the base of apartment towers where they were without power for almost a week, and we had daily free food for people, and then sort of ferrying people around to where they needed to go with a few drivers, and then probably cleaning out a couple dozen houses with probably mobilized about 200 volunteers to do that. So, you know, it's not necessarily just community campaigning, but it was all that sort of social organizing work that we got to organize out of our campaign office, which I think is not super common in electoral organizing. We just down tools on all of the rest of our electoral, you know, once the floods hit, it's like, oh, well, we're not going to go out and door knock, are we? We're going to mobilize the couple hundred volunteers that we've got who were door knocking to do that sort of social work.
It's Ari, by the way. I'm Ari. I guess following on from that, you said in your article that we reprinted in Green Left that anti-politics, at least in Griffith, was largely based on the hatred of the political class that treats people like idiots. And I experienced this to an extent when I was campaigning before the election as well. There were people I was talking to who were like, all the politics are the same. All politicians are the same was particularly one that stood out to me. And yeah. I mean, definitely directly following on from what you were just talking about, doing this very sort of atypical version of campaigning, I guess, only in the sense that it was the Greens doing it, or it was the campaign doing it, rather than necessarily an actual publicity stunt, so to speak. But yeah, could you elaborate on that idea of anti-politics, and particularly if there was anything else other than what we've already talked about that the campaign did to try and deal with that?
Yeah, no. It's the anti-politics thing, I think, is something like the analysis of anti-politics that is sort of at the core of what we've been doing up in Brisbane for at least 5 or 6 years since Jonathan Strieve's win at the Gabba Award in 2016. It's just this understanding that, and it's not just anti-politics understood as just people's feeling towards politicians, but what's the structural thing that underlies why people feel that way? And so our analysis is that people are more and more, you know, the connecting institutions, for instance, the trade union movement that used to connect people to the Labor Party and make them feel like their politicians had some meaningful relationship to them. The fact that that is, you know, largely declined and less people are members of their trade union. And the same with other civil society organizations. The fact that all of those things have significantly declined over the last few decades, largely because of sort of neoliberal shift in the political, you know, situation and economy, means that there's less and less capacity for politicians of the establishment to have a meaningful connection to people. And so it's not just that our politicians have gotten worse or they're more stupid or whatever. It's that there's a structural reason why people do feel alienated from politics in a way that perhaps is more than it was in the past. And so with that as an understanding, that was momentarily lessened during COVID, where people felt that politicians actually did something meaningful for their lives. But now that, you know, that sort of COVID moment is sort of passing, more and more people I think that anti-politics is coming back with a vengeance. And so, yeah, you're right when people say, you know, it's so common when it's like, oh, all politicians are the same. And when you go and you door knock or whatever as the Greens, it's very hard sometimes to convince people that you are different. You know, like you can try to say it, you know, and the Greens line is always, oh, we don't take any corporate money. And I'm sure that's the same as, you know, Socialist Alliance probably says things, down in Melbourne. But you know, like that's not in and of itself enough to convince a lot of people, because at the end of the day, you're still a politician or you're a representative of politics coming to their door. And if they don't feel connected to it, how do you overcome that? I think part of, there's two ways that we tried to do that. One was in our door knocking campaign, training our volunteers. And I've sort of written this in some reflections just on Facebook that I'll hopefully turn into an article or two. In our door knocking, it wasn't just a matter of going and trying to talk to people about our fabulous, amazing policies. I mean, I think they are pretty good. Like, I think the Greens have taken a good turn to the left, for lack of a better word. But, like, what's more important was the method of those conversations, that they weren't proselytizing. There were these kinds of conversations where it's a matter of trying to get the door knocker to realize that they are the same as the person they're door knocking, that there's a sense of solidarity, that they're, in fact, we're not there to try to, we're not like superior in any way just because we're these lefties who've, you know, got all these great ideas. In fact, the person you're door knocking may well be an expert in their own lives, is, you know, something that Max always says up here. And so you've got to listen to them and find what they are interested in and try to ask the right questions and draw out of them what matters to them, and then try to connect that to what we stand for. And once you can try to, and we call it sort of life knocking was the cheesy way that, you know, we called it, where you, you know, find out if they're a renter and then talk about how it's going for them as a renter. You know, have you had to move recently? How was it to try to find a place? You know, how are you going, coping with the cost of rent going up? Or if they're a mum, asking about childcare or how they've gone trying to juggle those sorts of things, the cost of childcare, access, you know, access to it. If they're a retiree, you know, how are they going with the pension? How's all that sort of stuff? And so, and then when you can find what it is in their life that, you know, that's not it's not politicized. They don't see it as political, but once you've had a nice, rich conversation, you can start to draw the link. So that's one way to try to counter that anti-politics, or not even counter it. It's a matter of, like, actually utilizing the anti-politics and saying, well, yes, you're right. The political class has betrayed you. Let's talk about what matters in your life, and let's talk about what we can do, you know, the Greens, but also the community can do to sort of change that. So that was the first thing. And then the other thing was all that community organizing and social organizing, because that proves to people that you're doing something different to the political class and that you're not just someone who's there to like say all these great promises and not do anything. So it's between those two things, I feel, we've been able to navigate that anti-political space in a way that's advantageous to us. Probably the third thing I would say, though, is also just people also just want you to, a lot of people, all you need to do is say, yeah, I agree, politics is fucked. Right?
I tried that.
Sometimes it's as simple as that. Yeah, it works most of the time.
Yeah,
it works some of the time, or maybe half the time. The other half of the time, you have to do a lot more deeper work. But sometimes people, all they want to hear is that you agree, you know, politicians suck, both the major parties suck, they're taking huge amounts of money from big corporations, they're not listening to us, and hey, look, let's go get them, basically. And at the very least, the Greens want to fight for things like bringing dental into Medicare, you know? Yeah. And like something that would be actual, like wiping student debt or something. So
yeah.
So sometimes it's as simple as that, but the more long form, deeper stuff that we're going to need to do over the next decade or more is that richer type of conversation and the kind of social organising.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Liam, where did the Greens go from here? Do the Greens have any plans for regional areas?
Yeah, it's true that, you know, obviously there's big wins in Brisbane, but it's still an inner city sort of phenomenon. Hmm. Well, we did win the second Senate spot, and that's Penny Ormond-Payne, and she is a teacher and a unionist from Gladstone. And so it's good to have a voice who is able to relate to regional Queensland. But if we're going to be hard-nosed about it, the next gains for the Greens will be probably twofold in Queensland. Firstly, they'll be consolidating the Brisbane win. So there's a lot of state and council seats that fall within these electorates that we'll want to start picking off. And then also deepening all that social organising that we've been talking about. But then trying to expand into the more outer burbs. I think the working class and the diverse working class and the outer burbs, particularly in, like, say, Ipswich and Logan, those places in Brisbane, are where we go next, because I think the message that we have is going to resonate even better there than it does in the city. It might take a little time because the Greens are culturally not connected to that sort of area. But if you think just policy-wise and in terms of strategy, the stuff that I was just talking about, there's no reason why that wouldn't work even better in places like Ipswich and Logan than it would in the inner city, where, you know, there's still a wealthy middle class who is a little bit, some of them, a little bit put off by our more antagonistic class politics. So, you know, so that's the sort of, so I wouldn't necessarily say regional, although there's definitely gains we could make, say, in Cairns. There's some, you know, like there's some areas in regional Queensland where we could go, but I think the bigger thing is the outer burbs.
Yeah.
And I think that will help start to break the distinction or that division between the inner city elite, progressive lefty greenies, and then the more working class, you know, people who are alienated from that entire culture. Which also requires the Greens to change, because, you know, well, you don't want to go out there as some kind of smug hybrid trying to get, well, you know, and then lecture everyone. But that's what we're trying to do, is change the way that we relate to people.
Well, this is my next question, Liam. I think it appears that the Queensland Greens are the more left-wing branch of the Greens in the country, and the sort of approach you've taken in Griffith is quite different to the Greens in Victoria. And I'm just wondering about, you know, what impact that your campaign will have on the Greens in other parts of the country. I mean, I guess my personal experience is that when the Greens in Victoria tend to get involved in campaigns, it's more like little photo shoots. I'm a great person because I've turned up at X protest without being involved in the on-the-ground work.
Organising and stuff, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's sort of, you have taken quite a different kind of approach, and I'm just wondering about the impact and contact from Greens in other parts of the country.
Yeah. Well, one of our it's a really good question, Sue, and I think one of the ways that we've thought of things up in Brisbane ever since Jono's win in 2016, when Jono won, it, I think we realized very quickly, and I wasn't involved in Jono's 2016 campaign, but I got involved straight after, but it became clear that if you win something that people don't expect you to win, all of a sudden people listen. And so our whole strategy has been to not spend too much time trying to win arguments within the party or even within the left, because I think a lot of the left is completely on the wrong track. But I don't want to waste any time in, you know, theoretical online debates with the left or other Greens or whatever, because I think it just saps useful energy from just doing the work and then just demonstrating that it can, that it works and it can be done. And so we've just gotten to work. Like, I haven't bothered having a, you know, some kind of fight or anything with basically anyone for a good 6 years, because we realized that the only way to win those arguments is by showing, not sort of just talking. And so our feeling is with the win in Brisbane, with the wins in Brisbane around this approach, we probably won't necessarily change the orientation of the party entirely. And to be honest, it's already heading in a good direction. Like, it's definitely getting better. It's definitely doing things, you know, it's heading in a direction I'm really happy with. So it's more just pushing in that direction. And now we get to be able to kind of show that. And I think we'll have a lot of capacity to sort of, there's people reaching out from Greens all around Australia now to me and Max and others saying, hey, how do we do this? How do we do what you guys did? And so I think there is a chance. I mean, it is a long project, and I think I don't know where it all leads in the end, but for me it was just a matter of trying to build a model that you can point people to and go, hey, here's the model, or here's our model that works, and whether you're in the Greens or you're in another organization or whatever who wants to transform Australia, then yeah, you know, we're very happy to provide you with, you know, lessons that we learned, and hopefully that starts to change the dynamics of stuff. Sort of a slightly diplomatic answer, I suppose, but I think that sort of has been our strategic perspective, is that wins, you know, people listen to winners.
I guess talking about winners and speculative, you know, the speculative future, what, if anything, do you think is with the Greens' prospects of actually winning a majority government one day? What do you think about that?
We ran this really bombastic forum about 12 months ago in the seat of Griffith called the 18-year plan for a Greens government, and we got absolutely, like, hammered online by a bunch of, like, Greenies and Labour people and whatever, being like, that is so ridiculous. I mean, it was never meant to be a majority government. The idea would be that we would be able to, within 18 years, with a particular strategy and an enormous amount of effort and resources, we theoretically could get to a point where we're the majority partner in a minority government. That's a whole big question about, like, how do we actually, you know, when we get to the more decisive moments in 10, 20 years' time, like, what role do the Greens play and all that? And that's probably too much for this show. Maybe have me back on for that chat. Or maybe when I'm down in Melbourne, we can chat over a beer. But I think there's with the deepening anti-politics of the electorate, which I don't see being arrested or reversed anytime soon, and with the growing climate crisis, with a growing housing crisis, and with a growing inequality crisis, what we're sort of, and a growing renter class as well, I suppose that's something that Max always talks about, is the fact that we've got this new layer of people who feel completely untethered and very much, they're not really tied to the political establishment in any way. They don't feel connected to it. They don't feel bent, like, the system benefits them in any way. And so they're willing to take risks and vote and do for parties and do things that might jeopardize the stability of the system because the stability of the system is not in their interest. And so with all of those conditions coming together, with a particular organizing approach and a particular politics, which is, you know, universalist, a bit class-based, and then all that community organizing, and I have to say a heck of a lot of very high-quality door-knocking, there's no reason why we couldn't pick up dozens of seats for the Greens over the next 10 to 20 years. Like, there really isn't. Like, it all just comes down to how well organized we are. The conditions are heading in our direction. It's just a matter of, can we build our capacity quick enough? And the winds in Brisbane, I think, show that that's possible. Whether it happens or not really comes down to enough people, you know, getting into it. So, yeah, that's my optimistic take, is that, yeah, I think there's a chance that in 10 to 20 years the Greens are some, you know, like, I think the two-party system could very well within 10 to 20 years be completely broken. And what we'd have is Greens having a gigantic block in Parliament, maybe some socialists from outside the Greens get up in the Senate or maybe even win a lower house seat or two, and then we've got the capacity to build some kind of left bloc in Parliament and you know, those sorts of things. Where that goes in terms of a transformation to some kind of, I don't know, what would you want to call it, democratic eco-socialist or something, Australia, is then a very big, rich question. But just in terms of can we get there, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully you're being pessimistic about that timeline, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, by 10 to 20 years' time, we're probably underwater. But, I mean, I think, I don't know. No, that's not true. I think the thing is, regardless of the timeline, we do need to win and we do need to build community power, because we're going to be dealing with disasters. And the state, like, what was fucking absolutely, completely clear to us in Brisbane was that the state is not going to be up to dealing with disasters in a way that actually looks after people. The gaps in the state response in the floods up here were remarkable. So many people were just falling through the cracks. And when you've got 150 trained door knockers who are dedicated, who believe in your politics and who want to get out there and help people, you can send them out to knock on people's doors once the floodwaters recede. You can be there as basically a first response team, and then you can direct volunteers to help clean up people's places, you know, in a way that the state, because if you're rooted in the community, you know where to go, you know. And you know, and you've got people living just down the road who can come help, whereas the state's this abstracted thing that is looking at it from this bizarrely, you know, disconnected viewpoint, and it took them a week to get, or more, to get around to people's places. So, in terms of, you know, regardless of, what climate change does, we'll need to build all this power, you know, anyway.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Liam. It's been really fun having you on the show, and yeah, we do have to wrap up, but congratulations on an inspiring campaign and a win that's really built on decades of hard work. And we are hoping this would lead to bigger victories. Thanks, Liam.
Thanks for having me on. Hey, cheers.
Thanks, Liam.
See ya.
No worries.